Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Blue Plate Special. Tonight on the menu, we have something a little bit different. We have debut author Carol Oldroyd and her nonfiction work, The Prison Wife Survival Guide. How are you doing tonight, Carol?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Really good, and I'm so pleased to have you being able to serve you up on the menu tonight.
Well, thank you.
First,
I'm excited to be here.
This is an unusual book with an unusual title. How did you come to write this?
Well, since 2007, I've been a professional freelance writer. And since 2012, I've been a professional prison wife.
Why don't you tell us a little bit how that came to be?
Well, it was 2012, one morning early. There was a knock on the door. My husband and I were both sound asleep upstairs. It was very early. And I came running down the steps, opened the front door, and to my surprise, there was a sea of law enforcement, local, state, and out-of-state law enforcement, plus the FBI, on my front porch, on my steps, all over my yard with their shiny shoes and shiny badges and shiny vehicles. And it was not something you see every day.
And what happened then?
Shortly after, I guess my husband heard us talking, and he came bounding down the steps and walked outside to talk to them, and I'm inside peeking through the blinds, and he came back in, and a few minutes later he says, "Well, I'm headed down to the police station. I'll be back after a while." And the rest is history.
Now, this isn't something you knew anything about, is it?
No, we had been married for, we'd been together for 14 years and married for 9 years when this happened. I was completely blindsided.
He was arrested on a cold case. If I can remember correctly from when we talked about this before.
Right, right. It was a case that had gone unsolved for 16 years.
Okay, well, now, why did you write this book?
Well, I learned really fast that I didn't know anything about being a prison wife. I knew nothing about any of it. I'm a paralegal. I thought I knew an awful lot about law. I didn't know much. I learned the hard way, and everything. I learned everything the hard way. I learned, you know, what you can do when they're arrested. I learned what happens when they're arrested. I learned about visitation, phone call, every single thing that I learned, I had to work for it. And there's nothing out there. There are no resources for the wives and partners of, there's even fewer resources for partners, but there are just no resources for wives. You're left to your own devices to figure it out or not, because they don't care if you figure it out.
So what's basically the first thing you discovered that you didn't know?
As soon as he's arrested, he is pretty much their property. It's that, and I wrote about this in the book, it was that the surreal feeling, as surreal as it was to open up the front door wearing a pink flannel nightgown to see all of those law enforcement officials on my front porch and in my yard, it was even more surreal to walk in, because he had advance notice. He got a phone call at the beginning of January and was told he needed to turn himself in a couple of weeks later. And so we had a little bit of time. It was that strange feeling of being in the sheriff's office. He walked around the corner. My husband was no longer, I couldn't touch him. I couldn't talk to him. I couldn't do anything.
And then keep just going on a little bit with the stuff that, like I said, that you didn't know, that you wish you'd known then.
The stuff I didn't know, I didn't know that I couldn't go into the courtroom with him. I didn't know that I would have absolutely no idea where they took him. Nobody cared that I didn't know. I made phone calls, and they didn't have an answer to give me, or they didn't care. And so I just had to wait. I went to a friend's house that night because this happened out of state. And late that night, I got a phone call from him. And the first thing he said was, "You never know how bad your nose can itch until you're handcuffed behind your back for 2 hours straight." And then I knew, that's when I knew he was okay. But I didn't know how to look for a lawyer. I didn't have any idea about visitation. I just assumed I could go visit him. I didn't know the process. I didn't know that he could be turned away. I didn't know anything. I didn't know what life would be like for him either. It's terrible.
Now, you talk quite a bit in the book about visitation. So why don't you talk a little bit about your own experiences with visitation? And again, what you didn't know.
What I didn't know. Well, visitation in jail and visitation in prison are very, very different. Well, at least in my experience. At jail, it was pretty informal. It was a tiny, tiny little ancient jail. And I basically walked up to a fence and pushed a little button on a really old, smelly little box and said his name. And you know, within about a half hour or so, they pressed the button and unlocked the gate. And after several tries, I finally opened the gate and got to go inside to see him. Inside, I was ushered into this, it was just surreal, this concrete room with a window that was about 5 inches by 8 inches. And I was in one room like that. He was on the opposite side of the wall, and we could almost see each other's whole face. Not quite, but almost. And he was handcuffed even in that room. It was the craziest thing in the world. But then in prison, though, visitation is much more relaxed in prison, which really surprised me, except for going through security. That is not relaxed. And the first time I went, I almost wound up arrested myself.
Now, that would have been awkward. What happened?
I thought I was being very, very careful. I didn't wear anything with metal, or so I thought, because I knew metal would set off the detector. I knew that I couldn't carry a whole set of keys. I could only carry one key and my ID, and that's all. And I walked up to the security, to the metal detector, and, of course, lights and flashes and alarms and everything went off, and I stepped back. And the guard, the female guard there, she had her little wand, and she waved it across, and we discovered that I had a few offending pieces of metal on me. And one of them was my bra. Underwire bras are not good when you're going through a metal detector. So we tried a number of different ways to be able to get through the metal detector, and it just didn't work. So I went out to the car and I actually found a way to remove the underwires from my bra. And I came back in, and again, several tries, because the button on my jeans, it was terrible. And when I finally got through, there was this wall of armed guards. Every time I tried to go through the metal detector, another guard would arrive, and I'm talking in riot gear. Everything but the helmet. They had the body armor, the assault rifles, everything. And every time I tried to go through the metal detector and the lights went off and the alarms went off, another guard would arrive. When I finally got through, this guy, the first guard in the row, he said, "You know, my wife, she gets these bras from Amazon, and they have plastic underwires." And I'm just like, I can like feel my face is on fire. And then I walk down to collect my ring and my key, because, again, my ring and my key, I had to take those off so they could send those through the metal detector, a ring and a key. I have no idea why. But so I walk down to collect my ring and my key, and another one says, "Well, you know, my wife, she wears sports bras, and they don't have underwires either." And I'm just horrified. Meanwhile, the guy behind me is out the door, because I am that person. I am the person that held up the entire line.
Well, and relationship to this, to the book, for you, you share a lot of these anecdotes in the book. But one thing you talk about in the book is what you can and can't wear when you go on visitation.
Right. I've got a chapter called "Yes, You Look Fabulous, No, You Can't Wear a Halter Top."
And what were your experiences with that?
Well, I was dressed very modestly the day that I just about got arrested. I had on just a long sleeve black top, a pair of jeans, and a pair of plain boots. But there was this lady who was there ahead of me, and and she didn't get to go in, but she showed up wearing a I don't know if you're familiar with the term cat suit, skin tight spandex bodysuit, leopard print, bracelets all the way up both arms, more piercings than anybody could even count, stiletto shoes. And I just thought, now you know that you can't get in here dressed like that. Why are you even going to try? But she did try, and she got sent home. A lot of people were turned away. This is another thing that people don't know. Visitation is not like it is on Goodfellas. You're not going to walk up there with, you know, a big heavy coat and your purse over your arm and a baby on your hip and go inside and pick a fight with your husband because you're mad at him. I stood outside in February in freezing rain because 2 days prior, the prison decided that you're not allowed to wear a coat inside the facility, and you're never allowed to take a purse. So they don't care. To them, they don't care how inconvenienced you are. And in a lot of ways, that makes sense. You know, they are more interested in security than they are in your comfort. So if you can comply with what they need, then you can get in. But if you can't, you can't.
Well, and that leads into a discussion about contraband. What is contraband?
Contraband has a very, very simple definition. It is everything he can't have. And I'm serious. And some of the things he can't have would really surprise you. And this is another thing that, because the rules are different from one facility to the next, and they don't have to make sense. Where my husband is now, if I sent him a greeting card, which he's allowed to have, some places you can't send cards, but he can have cards. If I signed his card in pink magic marker with a little heart, it would get sent back to me with a really, really strongly worded letter, because that's contraband. A book of a certain size, one of the few things that I can send to him, I have to order them. I can't send them from home. But if I order him a book and I don't know how big it is, how thick it is, and they get it in the mailroom and it's too thick, I will get it sent home and it will have a strongly worded letter. The prison scared his mother to death a couple of months ago over a big book that she had sent. Contraband is everything that they can't have. It's the obvious stuff, of course, but it's also everything else.
And even the letters and everything you send to him are all subject to being read and inspected. Am I right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you'll not slip anything past. I mean, certain people do, I'm sure, but you're lucky. If something slips past, you're lucky.
So you probably shouldn't be sending any, you know, like sexy time pictures or anything like that either, right?
Not unless you want every inmate in the entire prison to see it first.
Or at least every guard in the mail room, correct?
Or both.
Yes.
You just don't know. You don't know. I mean, there are really, really great guards. That first visitation appointment, the one where I just about got arrested, close to the end of the session, this guard walks up with a box of Kleenex, and I just kind of looked at him like, what? And he just smiled like he was my brother. He just had that kind of look. And he just smiled and he said, "You're gonna want this." He said, "Visitation is almost over," and it was so sweet. It was so compassionate. And then there are those. there are both kinds. You know, some people take a job as a guard because that's what they want to do. They're good at it, or it's the best job they could find, or any number of reasons. And some people are guards because I don't know their statistic. I don't know.
Well,
and you just don't know which ones you're gonna get.
So now you're to this point, your husband's in prison, or in jail, rather. He's in jail now.
Right.
The L word, lawyers.
Well,
what did you discover you didn't know about hiring a lawyer?
Everything. I thought that I did my research. Like I said, I'm a paralegal. I thought I had this stuff down. But I discovered that it doesn't matter if you hire a lawyer. You can hire a really, really bad lawyer. You can clean out your 401k and your husband's parents can wipe out their retirement to hire this lawyer and still get a really bad one.
Or are a public defender.
Public defenders, it's really funny, too, because public defenders generally have sort of a bad rap, and it's just not true. They have a certain skill set. They're very good at what they do, and not all lawyers that you hire are very good at what they do. You just don't know. Now, of course, if you're in the 1% and you have unlimited resources, you're going to do a lot better. But for those average people, we were, you know, before my husband went to prison, we were middle class. We had pretty decent household income and money in the bank. And we hired what we thought was a reasonably good lawyer. She wasn't cheap, but, you know, we could have spent more, but we didn't. We should have. She just didn't care. She had no interest in his case whatsoever. And it was a very bad decision, and I don't think it would have gone any differently if he had gone with a public defender.
Sorry about that. I got sidetracked there for a second to technically.
Ah.
We were back talking about lawyers. So in the guide.
Yeah.
You go through some of what you should look for when you're shopping for a lawyer, some of the questions you should ask, correct?
Right. Well, some of that, but really it doesn't matter a whole lot which questions you ask. I mean, they can tell you anything because his lawyer did. You know, we asked what I thought were all the right questions. We asked, you know, how many cases she was a former assistant district attorney, and she had worked on some nationally famous cases. I mean, cases that everybody listening would know of at least a couple of these cases that she had worked on, and she was the ADA for these cases. We had no indication, none. And, you know, what we learned was that she could very easily lie right to our faces in her office, and we had no way of knowing until after we hired her. And all of the money was gone.
So again, in the guide, you like I said, you talk about some of the ways that you can research a lawyer's background, try and take down some of the variables.
Right. I do get into that, but I also, you know, I try to make it clear that, you know, there are no guarantees. If a person is looking for a guarantee that they're going to hire a great lawyer, there's not going to be a guarantee of that. And I cover a lot of that. Money, you know, if you are very, very wealthy, yes, you can probably get a really great lawyer. If you're not really, really wealthy, you need to do research. You need to look them up every way you can. You need to check out. You need to go to the State Bar Association and look for complaints. But there again, every lawyer has had at least one complaint. So there are so many variables. There are no guarantees.
So
another system is not. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Oh no, go ahead.
Well, the system is not set up to be forgiving. If you hire your lawyer and you want to fire your lawyer, well, you can, usually, not always. But then, you know, you'll get a public defender and you don't exactly get to choose which one you have. Lawyers are the one part of all of this that drive me insane because there's no guarantee that you're going to get a good one.
And what did you discover about you as the wife, about the relationship with basically the relationship between your husband as lawyer and you, where you fit into the puzzle?
Well, I learned a couple of things. First of all, you know, that everybody has heard of attorney-client privilege. I didn't really understand what that meant. I didn't know that by talking to me, it compromised his privacy with her. She told us in her office that we were both her clients. And I discovered later that that's not true. And he was the only one who was her client. And she talked to me very openly, even though she didn't always tell the truth. She texted me. She emailed. I had a very open line of communication with her. But that isn't usually the case. If you go with the public defender, the wife is not going to have any communication. You pick up the phone and try to call the public defender, they're either not going to answer or they're just going to say, sorry, I can't talk to you. The idea of having a conversation and finding out what's going on with your husband's case, that's not how it goes. And it shouldn't be. Again, things I didn't know at the time.
Again, because I'm sure that was frustrating for you at some times, but now you understand why.
I do, and in a way, I wish I had known sooner because I wouldn't have tried as much. It frustrated all of us, and I think probably a lot of the times when she told me things that weren't true, it was because she just didn't want to communicate, and it would have been easier if we had established that at the beginning.
And that makes sense. The last thing that you kind of talk about in the book that it was hard for you and would probably be hard for others is, what's his life like? Stuff that you had to learn about his life.
Well, my husband has a really interesting personality. He is very positive, and he's very mellow. He's very low key, and it's really tough to know when something's wrong. I have to pull things out of him. I wrote him a letter. Actually, while I was writing this first book, I wrote him a letter and I said, I need to ask you some questions. Just because we don't talk about this stuff. We talk about, the different documents we're filing to try to get some sort of relief with his sentence, but we don't talk about his life. And I discovered that, he never talks about like gang culture. And when I was really surprised by his answer. He says, oh yeah, they're everywhere. he says, in this particular facility, they're not that bad. But in other facilities, it's terrible. It's very bad. And I guess it was about a year ago, he was just playing chess and a man was killed right beside him. He didn't see it coming. So life is surreal in there. And if your husband is anything like mine, you might not know what he goes through. When he was in jail, there is a law or an ordinance, I don't know what you call it, but according to the state, every person who is in any type of isolation, he was in isolation for, I think, 11 months.
Mm-hmm.
They have to get out of their cell for at least an hour a day. He was let out of his cell for, I think, 15 minutes two times in over a year. Not once a day, two times total. The food, he was given, I think he said milk, he got milk twice over the period of a year, and he got a piece of fruit twice over the period of a year.
So
life is unbelievable.
In general, so someone who, how is it different from what somebody's going to see on TV?
Well, it depends on the facility. Every facility is different because at the one-year mark, they opened a new jail, and suddenly he was free to walk around the pod at will. They opened up the doors in the morning, and he could go into the middle of the pod, and it's like a big dormitory, and play chess and watch TV and stuff like that. It really depends on where they are. I'm sorry?
Oh, no. So to kind of sum it up a little bit on what is this first book, this is part of a series, right?
Right, yes.
Okay, this is book one?
This is book one. Prison Wife Survival Guide, How to Survive the First Few Weeks, is just that. It's everything happens really, really quick during the first few weeks. He's arrested, then there's, you may or may not be there when it happens. I was, but if he's arrested while he's out, you know, if he's arrested like at the scene of a crime or you know, in a traffic stop or whatever, and you're not there, that can happen one of us, you know, a few different ways. But you won't know where he is right away. Probably won't. So if everything goes on pause, and then things happen quickly, you need to get a lawyer. You need to find out about visitation. You need to find out about the phone system, and phones are expensive, and what to mail him, and it's everything happens very quickly.
Bail. If you're going to be able to bail him out.
Bail is another thing. It's kind of interesting. I've asked different people, different women, as I was writing this, what's the first thing you would do if your husband was arrested? And most of them say, I'd go bail him out. Well, you're a lawyer, so you know how unlikely that is.
Yes. Definitely.
Bail is not a guarantee. And some of them say they'd call a lawyer. Some of them say that they'd go visit him. What really struck me is that nobody knows for sure. Nobody, unless you've
right.
been there, you don't know what you'll do.
So this,
everybody
this
has
book,
some idea.
So again, this book covers that first hectic few weeks of
right.
this new surreal part of your life. Is this book?
Right.
Where can people find this book?
At Amazon. It's in pre-order now, and it will officially launch on August 1st.
Okay. But then go ahead and pre-order it now?
Right.
And then what can we look forward to in book two?
In book two is, it's also Prison Life Survival Guide. This one is Managing Life at Home While He's Away. That is tough. He's gone, and it's the strangest thing in the world. You're married, but he's not there. You can talk to him, but he can't participate. You get his input, but you're really the one in charge, and it's tough. Your finances, if you have been a two-income household, your household income has plummeted. All the responsibilities stay the same. You have lots and lots of really hard decisions to make. I had to sell his truck. It broke my heart, but I had to sell his truck. It's all about, book two is all about the stuff that's going on at home that you never dreamed you'd have to handle by yourself. And
interesting.
In book three is taking care of, well, book three, we have a tentative title. We don't have an official title for it yet, but the tentative
mm-hmm.
title is taking good care of yourself. One of the things that I've learned is it's really, really hard to enjoy anything. I'm getting better at it. But every time you laugh, especially for the first year, every time you laugh, every time you have a good meal, every time you sleep in a comfortable bed, every time you say, God, this pillow sucks, and you go buy a new pillow, you think that, you know, he's not sleeping in a comfortable bed. He doesn't have a pillow at all, and you can't send him one. He hasn't had a good meal since the last time you cooked him supper. Book three is all about the wife. And not
well,
losing sight of the fact that you still have a life.
Well, this is really interesting. And will you come back and talk more about this as the series progresses? Because this is one of those you don't go on Amazon or go to the library or anything, you know, and find 15 books on this subject.
No, and that's exactly why I'm writing them, because I'm an avid reader. I've always been an avid reader. My first thought was, okay, there's got to be a book out there to tell me what to do, and there wasn't. So, you know, after lots and lots of Google searches and lots of phone calls, I decided I had to write it myself.
Well, everyone, where can people find you? Find out about your book.
Find out about the book at PrisonWifeSurvivalGuide.com. And I'm also on Facebook, Prison Wife Survival Guide on Facebook, and on Twitter, but Twitter's a little slow getting off the ground.
So really, people, they can just go to the website, PrisonWifeSurvivalGuide.com, and that will have
right.
the information about the book, the upcoming releases, some blog posts. It's just general information about you and the books, because you're writing this under a pseudonym, Lee Connor.
I am. Like I said, I've been a freelance writer for a long time, and I just felt like, and Lee Connor's not really a fake name. It's really part of my real name.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of, you know, I pulled out some. It didn't feel right to take a total pseudonym, but I didn't necessarily want all of this connected.
Right.
So yeah.
So
I
the
do,
best way.
I'm
the best way to
pseudonym.
So the best way to find it on Amazon is to just go, if you put in Prison Wife Survival Guide, it will pop up, because I double-checked,
it
and it pops right up. And I look forward to hearing more from you about this as the series progresses.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely. And you have a good evening now, and thanks for stopping by the Blue Plate Special. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
Take care now.
Bye-bye.